step by step. Ooh, baby, gonna get to you, girl. Step by step.
All right, let me get in early so we can pop this down. Hour number three, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, Rod Babers, Brad Kellner. I'm Kevin Dunn. Two in, two to go.
What is this?
New Kids on the
New
Block.
New Kids on the Block, God. Man. Yeah. This was garbage. New was Kids this on late the block? 80s or early 90s?
You picked the worst of the boy bands. New Kids on the Block is like the worst of the boy bands.
I mean, just went with the 90s, man.
Are there, okay, it's 90s. Are there any good boy bands? The only one that I would say is
great
Boyz II Men was actually, it's not my favorite, but at least they were talented.
New Edition was probably, in my opinion, might have been the greatest boy band of all time.
There you go,
there's
one.
Of course.
Bobby Brown was in that.
Bobby Brown was in it. I mean, Ralph Tresvant was in it. I mean, that's Belle Biv DeVoe in there.
All
I mean,
right.
They had a lot of. And of course, I mean, the original boy band, is that the Jackson 5 is the original boy band? Is that?
You could even say some of the 60s groups, but they weren't boys.
With the teenage, when they were like teenagers, right?
Younger men.
Yeah. I would say the Jackson 5 is the first boy band I remember, but I don't. Because they were like boys, too. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the greatest boy band. NSYNC was a decent one. Isn't that Justin Timberlake's boy band? NSYNC wasn't bad.
I didn't like them, and it may have been because I was at the age where I shouldn't have liked them.
NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys were pretty big.
They were too big,
I mean, this is like kindergarten, first grade BK. That was the stuff that everybody loved.
Oh, yeah.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
I would have been in high school and college.
I said pop, bubblegum pop. It's like the mall pop. Like, you were like going to the mall and doing stuff like that. I remember this phase of the music world.
So a lot of them got started.
It is. Well,
then Disney.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you saw the...
Or Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah, you saw the promise of Justin Timberlake. You're like, ooh, that dude can go out on his own.
Yeah.
Boom. He did.
He did. All right, guys, let's get back to college football here. Some Texas football nuggets. Any nuggets that stood out to you guys? I mean, obviously, I guess the biggest nugget would be that Marquez Bimage has decided to sit out this year. And so we'll see kind of who that opens up options for. That is something that I think Rod and I are more in alignment on that one. BK does feel like this is going to be a serious loss for the Horns.
I do. A guy with 34 career starts, or 34 career appearances, I should say, not 34 career starts. He's played in 34 games as a Texas Longhorn.
But he was a projected starter.
But he was the projected starter. And I think whoever is opposite of Joseph Osai as that other edge rusher, and I know Joseph Osai is technically a jack, and some people may call that a linebacker, but for all intents and purposes, the other edge for this Texas football team, I think that's very important. Right? The only real end, if you will. I think that position is very important, just to take some of the pressure off of Joseph Osai and take some of the pressure off the rest of the defensive line. And you got to find a way to get pressure, to use that word again, on opposing quarterbacks from both sides, right? And you can't just have Joseph Osai being your only legitimate pass rush threat. You have to have it coming from all angles. Bimage, look, we haven't seen a ton of him. It's not like he has been incredible over his first couple of years on the 40 acres, but... he's got some experience, he's shown some signs, and I was really excited when I saw that he had dropped from 272 down to 251 pounds going into the season. Like, that just gave me another reason to be excited about what Bimage could bring to this table as that potential edge rusher opposite of Joseph Osai. I figured he was the starter, I figured he was the guy who was going to give Texas the best chance to have that impact pass rusher on the other side of Osai, and now he's gone. They've got other guys, there's some depth there on the defensive line, which... No, this isn't an end-of-the-world type of situation. It's nowhere close to a push-the-panic-button type of situation. But I think his loss will be felt by this Texas defense this year.
We talked about Collins during my one-and-done as one of the freshmen, Rod, that could come in and play. I'm still excited about, really excited about Ojomo. This kid came in at 16.
Yeah, no, I hope BK's wrong, but he sounds like he's got a sensible, rational take on it.
Finally.
No, I mean, it's like I said, we hadn't seen much, but you brought up the Tim Crowder tweet, and behind the scenes, even last year, I heard people talking about kind of the natural pass-rushing ability of Marquez Bimage.
And that was at 270?
Yeah, and that's when he was a big guy. Now he's like 251. He lost like 20-something pounds, and everybody expected him. Opposite Osai with one-on-one blocking to show a lot of promise and to be able to beat those one-on-ones consistently. That's not going to happen, so now you got to rely on younger guys. You don't have that talented depth, but Man, you got Alfred Collins, you got Vernon Broughton. That's a good problem to have that you have to – now you must maybe expedite the process for those young guys a little bit because you need to see something from them. And I believe they're cross-training both of those guys. I saw that from Chip Brown at Horns 247, that they're cross-training Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton at the strong side defensive end, so opposite Osai in that three technique. Mm-hmm. Not the nose guard, but the three technique, so the other interior D lineman. And I think that's the way you got to do it. When you get
because the zero is going to be, we know
zero,
who that's going to
be.
Yeah,
that's right, head up, or that one technique, right, which is basically a shade up, head over that center there, one shade over. So, yeah, when you get talent phenoms like Collins and Broughton, yeah, cross-train them, because you never know where they're going to end up or where you might need to put them situationally.
Mm-hmm.
Because those kind of guys where they can excel inside or outside. You have some players where they have to be outside or have to be inside. Those two guys, just put them on the D-line. They can wreak havoc. They're both war daddies, man. I'm looking forward to it.
BK, I like some of these third down and long radar looks that you get, and part of that is you just get lighter and lighter. I mean, it's like Jimmy Johnson when he got to the Cowboys or, hell, even Miami. It's like, we're going to downsize everything. If you're a safety, you're going to linebacker. If you're an end, you're going to tackle. You got to be careful with that on all downs, but I do see some obvious passing downs being able to utilize kind of what Rod's talking about.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%, and I like that sort of 250 range for edge rushers, man. I mean, gone are the days where your defensive ends are 275, 280. Usually nowadays, whether it's the college level or the NFL level, your best pass rushing threats are in the 250 to 260 range. So I thought that weight would have played better for Marquez Bimage, but that's kind of where Broughton is. That's kind of where Alfred Collins is. And I mean, I already had high expectations and high hopes for those two guys. They're even higher right now, and I think they're going to get an opportunity very early on, especially Alfred Collins, right? I think he's the guy who more closely fits that position, number one, and I think I've got a little bit just higher touted recruit. I got a little bit higher expectations for him being able to come in here and making an impact from day one, so really going to be watching out for him to see if he can maybe crack the starting lineup very early on, right? It sort of feels mm-hmm. like Ojemo is maybe the other candidate right there, as you mentioned, KD, but can Alfred Collins do enough in fall practice leading up to game one against UTEP on September 12th to where maybe he is a starter on that defensive line.
Now, Jacoby Jones, are they going to look at him more in that in spot or that jack spot? More the in spot, right?
I think so. I think, yeah, Byron Vaughns is your backup jack as of right now. And yeah, Jacoby Jones, former kick returner for the Houston Texans, now playing defensive end for the Texas Longhorns. He's had a crazy career.
It has.
But he's a senior on this team, so yeah, he's been with this program for a while.
Hasn't had
a ton of playing time. Yeah, hasn't had a ton of playing time here on the 40 acres. But maybe a guy who could also, obviously he's going to give you depth, but maybe a guy who can give you some playing time this year as well. What about some other nuggets, gentlemen, from practice? Anything stick out from you? I've got a few, but anything you guys want to hit from the first couple of days of Longhorn practice that you've seen or heard?
The offensive line, there's been some talk that you could get, which is a good thing, more competition on the offensive line for Texas. Now, we know from the left side to the center, that's solidified. We all know it's going to be Cosme, Junior Angelau is going to be your left guard, and then Kerstetter is going to be the center.
Assuming the right side works out.
Well,
in terms of center, right?
I think either way I think Kerstetter's gonna be your center. Okay. I don't think they have another option at center. I think they have options at tackle and guard on the right side.
Gotcha.
And because you don't have any other option, they could go with Rafidi Gamai, but from what I'm hearing, I don't think Rafidi Gamai is giving them that much reason to be confident that, oh, Rafidi Gamai can handle the starting center spot. So I think it's really important, and I think for Kerstetter, he's a guy that can play anywhere, but I think he's going to be more valued at center. Now, your point, if you end up getting a lot out of Okafor and he exceeds your expectations, and right now what I'm hearing is Isaiah Hookfin and Willie Tyler, that's Chip Brown at Horns 247 threw this out there too, that those two guards, along with Tope Amadi, actually, I think they may have surpassed Tope Amadi, at least right now, what it looks like. But those two guys, they're looking at a guard and a tackle, Christian Jones. If Christian Jones can step up at tackle. But either way, you have Denzel Okafor, and he is your swing option. So if you get one of those guys who excels at tackle, oh, you know what? Boom. I'll put Okafor at guard.
Yeah.
If you get Isaiah Hookfin, who turns out to be a starting caliber guard and proves that he can handle that position, like, okay, let's move Okafor to tackle. They're confident enough with Okafor at tackle or guard as a starting caliber player. What they need to figure out is who other than Okafor can give you some starting caliber reps, and hopefully they get more than one or two guys that can do that. Backup center is they got to focus on that, whether it be Rafidi Gamai or Jake Majors. They got to figure out who their backup center is and be confident in that guy, just in case.
Just in case. Yeah, yeah. I'm more focused on getting the right side of the offensive line figured out, right? The starters on that right side of the offensive line figured out. And I'm with you. I feel good about Denzel Okafor having one of those two starting spots, and it seems like he's a guy who could play either right tackle or right guard. But, man, you got to make sure you have a fifth. And Hookfin is a guy we haven't talked about a whole lot.
No.
He's part of the 2019 class. Yeah. He was a four-star recruit, so relatively highly touted a year ago, I think out of the Sugarland area. I'm excited to hear that, right, because that means he's playing well. It means he's performing well. That means he's in shape. That means he was getting it done during this quarantine. The fact that he's getting first-team reps kind of out of nowhere, because you've heard so many other names as guys that we all expected to get the first crack at first-team reps once fall practice began. The fact that Hookfin's getting some reps, I think, is a good sign that he might be the guy who's ready to go for this team.
Yeah, I think it's a great sign. I just think they have more options, and it's kind of about where you've been, and Texas has been in hell, not purgatory, hell, for the last 10 years.
Is there anything worse than hell?
No. Okay. Not that I know of. Please text us if you know that. But, yeah, so I think they're out of that. They're still not going to be probably where most Texas fans want them to be. And, I mean, obviously that's not the case, because usually you know who your five are, and you've got redshirt freshman and redshirt sophomore that you're really fired up about. Some of that's the case, though, because that's where some of that competition goes in on the right side, where Tyler Johnson was a big-time recruit. And they felt pretty damn good when they got Hookfin.
Yeah.
And they were able to do the right thing that, unfortunately, Okafor got out of rhythm, so to speak, where you really want to redshirt that guy his freshman year and not force him in there. And my biggest question with him was, did it create too many bad habits? From all accounts, it didn't. And they've been able to kind of restructure him, rebuild him, and he's going to be good to go at right tackle.
Yeah, you just got to have a solid enough right side of the line, right? I mean, we know the strength of this offensive line is going to be the left side, with Cosme, who's projected to be a top half of a first-round pick next year, with Kerstetter, one of the best returning offensive linemen in the entire conference. And with what we saw from Junior Angelou starting every game last year, you feel good about the left side of this O-line. You just need the right side to be respectable. Like, you can't have on every third and two or every goal line situation, you can't have only going to the left as your option.
Agreed.
That's where the defense is like, we know they're going left. Yep. That's the only way they ever go on third or fourth and one. So we're going to stack up the left side of the offensive line, the right side of our defensive line, and prevent that from happening. Like, you have to at least be able to keep them honest with the right side of your offensive line. Doesn't necessarily have to be a strength or a really good twosome over there, but they have to be respectable to allow this offense to do what it needs to do.
That's a great point that we probably haven't hit enough or I haven't heard enough, that, and we all three of us saw this. We'd come together and look at each other. We're all in different shows, but we're all buddies and running into each other. And I don't know, we talked about this a lot. The route combinations, I mean, when Garrett Wallow ran that route for the Texas, I think it was Duvernay, running a square end.
I think you're right, yeah.
And it's just like, oh, my God. It was obvious how predictable they were with passing, and probably didn't talk about that enough, just how predictable they are. We've talked about how they were with certain running plays, but they cut off essentially half the field for themselves with run plays because of that.
Yep. No, I totally agree. I actually did, there's a great stat about the power success rate of offensive line. So the power success rate is basically its percentage of runs on third and fourth down with 2 yards or less to go that converts to a first down or a touchdown. All right, so third or fourth down, 2 yards or less to go, converts first down or a touchdown. If you look at the power success rate for Texas in 2019, it was 91st in the country, 65.5% of those runs on third and fourth down, 2 yards or less, were converted into first downs or touchdowns. Stuff rate, another good analysis of offensive line play. Percentage of runs stopped for no gain or a less, right? So basically for a negative percentage of runs stopped for a negative play.
They were pretty good on that, though,
they
right?
were really
Which
good
didn't
on
match
that.
Up.
In 2019, they were 10th in the country at allowing negative plays, which means they didn't allow many negative plays in the run game. So those things don't add up, right?
Yeah.
That means teams are not getting negative penetrations against your offensive line, so you're getting a push, and yet when everybody knows you have to run short yardage situations, third and fourth, 2 yards or less to go, getting back to the point about BK saying you can't be so predictable in a running game, and you're talking about how predictable they were in the passing game, they were also just as predictable in the running game last year. That's why Les Miles knew what they were going to do with the quarterback power. The same thing with TCU. We saw some of that against Iowa State, too. They do become really, really predictable in the running game, and I think that was reflected in those stats. Because you don't give up any negative penetration, you're supposed to be able to always get a push, and yet when they needed a push most, those short yardage situations, they couldn't get it. They got it in 2018, though.
They did. I was about to say 2018.
They were top 40.
I know
the
they would. I would think even higher, but I'm sure they would have been.
Power success rate, they're really good.
Guys, those numbers tell me two things. One, a lot more of this because of that was on the coaches and the scheme,
yep.
and less on the individual offensive linemen and what they were doing. I know they had issues with pass blocking. That's a separate thing. But it also gets back to BK's point, the fact that everyone knew when they were running the quarterback power in 2018,
mm-hmm.
but you had both sides you could run it to.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was against Oklahoma, but remember Andrew Beck coming around on one of those big touchdowns, and they're running it right.
You're right. It's unfortunate, but you're right.
Yeah, and it's weird. Another number to kind of throw into the weirdness, the oddities of the Texas rushing game last year is that both running backs averaged nearly 6 yards a carry.
How
does that happen? You look at the stats and you think Texas had a really good rushing offense last year, yet whenever they needed a rushing offense last year, they couldn't get it done.
And they were 118th in fourth down conversions last year. In 2018, they were second in the country, and you got Bam Bam Sam. You're right; it doesn't add up.
Yeah, and it's not like they had 80-yard runs every week that inflated the rushing average for Rojo and for Keyonte Ingram. It's just for some reason in big moments when you needed them most. I think the Iowa State game, that final offensive sequence. You think a TCU game as well.
It's goal line on TCU, LSU.
LSU, of course. You couldn't get it done.
That's going to be great when someone comes up to us in 15 years and says, "All right, so I'm a big numbers person and I was going through all this. 2019, the rushing game, the run game?
Right, what happened?
What happened?
What happened?
It's like, you know what? We were trying to figure it out then. We were watching it.
I still really can't tell you, put my finger on exactly why it was so
what would
inept
the one thing be,
situationally.
Though? It's just predictable in general for the offense?
I think it was predictable in 2018, but I think Andrew Beck's blocking ability was that much, I think
I
that more elite,
that.
And you had more of a balanced offensive line instead of the one you had last year. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, defense real quick, because I'm going to Roch rant of the day. I'm going to talk more Texas offense. So real quick, a little nugget from defense. Go check out Horns 247. Chip Brown's got a really good piece up there with some practice nuggets. Can't go through all of them. Don't want to go through all of them. You need to go there and check it out for yourself. But one little nugget, we talked about the cornerback position last week. Apparently Kenyatta Watson getting a lot of love. Kenyatta Watson along with Deshaun Jameson seem to be splitting reps. Jalen Green seems to be boss hogging the majority of his reps on his side. Mm. He's not really competing with Josh Thompson. I think that's less of a competition than the Kenyatta Watson-Deshaun Jameson competition.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. Oh, if you got three starting corners, you're going to need them in the Big 12.
Right.
But I'm a little surprised that Deshaun Jameson, who got all the preseason love from the All-Big 12 team, is the one that seems to be in the real competition, in the heat of it. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into some more practice nuggets on the other side, too, because I want to continue this conversation. We didn't talk enough about the skill positions. Apparently, there is a lot of scuttlebutt, a lot of talk about the wide receiver position for Texas, and a number that I still own the title. It's the greatest number 21 on the 40 acres. There's another number 21 that's turning heads. We'll talk about them. I'll get into how I think the Texas offense is going to look with these skill position guys. And there is a certain philosophy that I'm praying that Mike Yurcich will adopt when it comes to the Texas offense this year. We'll address all of that and more in Roch Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out here with Brad Keltner and Kevin Dunn. I want to continue talking about the buzz from a Texas Longhorn football practice so far. And granted, they haven't put on any pads yet. So everything, I think they've done shells, which is just shoulder pads and shorts. But they haven't done full pads just yet. I'm sure that day is coming. Hell, they might have just done it today. But everything before, the research that I did before today, they hadn't done anything in full pads. But that doesn't keep us from speculating and from projecting how good Texas is going to be based on the information that is leaking out of spring practice. And my man Chip Brown did a good job over at Horns 247 of gathering up some of these news, notes, and nuggets. One name that keeps coming up, all the reports I see, whether it be Inside Texas or whether it's Horns 247, Troy O'Meara seems to be coming up a lot. The 6'3", 230-pound wide receiver is said to be the best freshman so far. Some people have gone as far as to say he's not just the best freshman so far. He's been the best offensive player out there so far.
So not even receiver, period. Offensive player.
Period.
Wow.
I'm like, what the hell?
Man.
I know. That's what I said, too. All right. I was like, hold your horses.
Is he right, cooking out there? Is he cooking out there,
what
too?
What he's doing out there. Obviously, he looks good in volleyball shorts, apparently, and people are really high on that. But apparently, he's been out there deboing the DBs.
Okay.
Like, he's had no pads on, but been deboing some of the Texas DBs. And he's at 6'3", 230, and he's just a freshman.
So that's crazy, because I gave the numbers yesterday, and they were wrong, so my bad on this. But what? I had looked at Troy O'Meara's 247 recruiting profile.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And I saw that he was 6'3", 205. So did he just, like, put on 25 pounds over 6 months?
I have no idea. I'm like, what went on?
What happened there?
I have no idea.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
So,
I don't know.
So as someone who tutored provisional students just to be a good guy during freshman year, sometimes a freshman 15 comes on that summer.
I guess it could. It could. I don't know.
This is good weight.
You could.
This is good weight.
I hope it's good weight, but it obviously is because he's carrying it very well. He's out there deboing guys, running past guys, and making plays as a freshman out there.
He still looks skinny, too. I mean, he's still or lean, I should say.
No. Trust me, based on the picture, he's in better shape than I think I was at that age, and I was in damn good shape. I had nice abs.
12-pack.
I had it. Trust me, that was my Sex Panther days. It was unbelievable. I'm telling you, I still got that. Matter of fact, I should tweet out that picture.
Tweet it out.
Right next to his picture and be like, who did it better? Who wore 2-1 better?
Oh, is that what
I'm scared I'm going to lose. That's why I don't want to tweet it out. No, I'm not going to do that.
Is that though? I remember, Rod B, covering you in practice. Was that whenever you would do J.J. Stokes and he would kind of tie up the jersey and tuck it under?
We do the Zeke thing.
Looked like Kevin Patrick, but you weren't a defensive end.
Looks like a tube top kind of thing.
Yeah. That was a big SEC thing.
Dude,
Pac-12 thing.
Me and Lance Armstrong had the best abs in Austin at the time, and his, we know now, he cheated to get his. So mine were better. Mine were all
Rod
natural.
Rod has no problem with Lance cheating, except for the fact that, look, I had better abs at the same time.
Lance,
I know you got the magazine cover, but.
You know what I'm saying? But anyway, Troy O'Meara, he's turning heads, guys. And I like this. And the reason I like it is because I'm also hearing good things about Josh Moore, who BK's had a man crush on for a long time and been talking about how well Josh Moore is. And we know the H position, Jake Smith and Jordan Winton, are going to be productive. Whichever one of those guys ends up playing it, that position itself has been productive since Tom Herman's been here. No reason to think it'll fall off now. And I've heard that Brandon Eagles actually at the X position, that boundary X, that he's actually looked really, really good too, and thank God he decided he wants to play football, which is also a really good sign. But the Troy O'Meara thing is interesting because Tariq Black, I think, is opposite of Brendan Eagles right now, getting a lot of reps. And then Josh Moore and Troy O'Meara, and they've actually, with Mike Yurcich, I'm hearing that they're experimenting with different personnel packages. Well, I love, they even got a 10 personnel package that they used last year late versus LSU, and then they used it late in the season when they had tight end, when they had all the tight end injuries, and they broke out the 10 personnel package.
Did they use it
bit,
against Iowa or against Utah too?
I believe you are correct. I can't remember exactly. I remember they used it late against LSU and didn't use it again until late in the season. And I kept thinking to myself, they should use more of the 10 personnel package. Well, apparently now they are using more 10 personnel packages. And I think with Yurcich, you're going to find he's going to use 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, 20 personnel, two backs, zero tight ends, 10 personnel. You go back and watch Yurcich's film, and I would encourage you, it's on YouTube, Texas versus Oklahoma State 2018. That's the film you want to watch. It's great Yurcich film. It's fantastic. Shows you how diverse his play-calling palette is. He's not so rigid about the 11 personnel, but this is why the Troy O'Meary thing is interesting. I have long held the belief that, you know, sometimes you get a certain receiver who's got tight end stuck in a wide receiver's mindset, or maybe a wide receiver in a tight end's body. Sometimes you get these running backs who are, and that's what you want with Jordan Whittington, right? He's a running back in a wide receiver's body, or a wide receiver with a running back mindset. That's what kind of, Jake Smith is that similar guy. Those are the hybrid guys. I think the future of football, of offensive football, the next evolutionary leap, and I think it's already happening, is positionless football. Period. Joe Brady was a big fan of positionless football. Several quotes from LSU's Joe Brady, the former OC Joe Brady for LSU, before the season started, saying, "I endorse positionless football. All of our guys are going to learn the different concepts from every position, and then they'll be able to play any position on the football field." Kyle Shanahan is my boy Shano, huge advocate of positionless football. That's why he's got George Kittle, and he's got Kyle Juszczyk, and he's got Debo Samuel's a wide receiver with a running back mindset, right? And Juszczyk is a fullback that can play tailback. They say he lined up at six different positions during the season.
I believe it.
H-back, tight end, fullback, tailbacks. They line up in a slot every now and then. Same thing with Kittle. And you get all these guys that are interchangeable pieces, and you build what essentially is, it's a Rubik's Cube, right? What do you say about a Rubik's Cube? That it has like a certain quintillion number of combinations, right, in a Rubik's Cube. That's what you build. And the defense has to now account for and prepare for all of those different combinations, and they can't. There's no way. They don't have enough time to do it. And honestly, defensive players, they're not smart enough to comprehend all those combinations. And that's why Shanahan combines it with pre-snap motions and shifts to give you more information to process with these interchangeable parts and positionless football, and nobody can keep up with it. And I think Baltimore's going there too, by the way. Baltimore's about to do the same thing. Devin DuVernay is going to become their version of Debo Samuel, I promise you. They're going to start handing him the ball off, using him in backfield motion, all that kind of stuff.
And they've done it with Andrews to some degree.
They've done it with Andrews, so he's basically their slot receiver, and they move him around too. But I think it's why they're asking Marquise Brown to gain some weight. What, he gained 20 pounds? Hollywood Brown?
Yeah. After 160.
He was right, he was. So he needed to gain some kind of weight. But I think the future of football is positionless football. You could argue the future of everything in this country is less black and white and less binary and becoming more gray, right? I was talking to my friend about the census actually recently, because I kept getting texts about the census for some reason. Did you guys fill out the census?
Yeah. Absolutely, I did.
Okay. I filled it out so long ago, and I get emails and texts all the time.
I have no idea why they keep sending us this.
I did it on time. I took the due date seriously, because I take that seriously. That can help us out.
No, it is. It's actually really important.
I'm not doing it anymore because all the texts and emails I'm getting from them. How about a better system?
It's your civic duty, like voting, though, it is. Like, you should do it, but
you could claim it's more important.
But you guys realize it wasn't until 1960 that people could select their own race. Like, and prior to that, individuals' race was determined by census takers. It wasn't until 2000 that Americans could choose more than one race. So say you were biracial. It wasn't until 2000 they're like, all right, we also think about these people who are mixed race people. Wow. Let's put them on there. Because everything was so black and white and so binary.
Yeah.
Right? You didn't think about that. I love the one of my favorite
stories. So you had to pick one?
You had to pick one. Yeah, the first census in 1790, free whites, slaves, and other free persons. That was the three boxes you could check. Either you were a free white, you were a slave, or you were another free person. There you go. So we have come a long way, right, since that. And I think football is very similar, and football used to be so compartmentalized and so rigid about the roles that every player had to play. And I think now we're realizing you can move these guys around and you can put them in different situations to find matchup advantages. Tom Herman failed miserably at that last year. He didn't use any He did. As a matter of fact, take it back. One game, the Utah game, he used a bunch formation for the first time all year, and he thought it was something mind-blowing. He called it snug, for God's sakes. And they wouldn't use motions and shifts to get their receivers open. You'd never see Colin Johnson moved around. They almost left him out there to kind of fend for himself out there on an island. And these days, coaches are scheming receivers open. Shanahan schemes receivers open. So does Andy Reid. So do the best offensive minds out there. Lincoln Riley schemes. Why do you think CeeDee Lamb, who everybody knows the best receiver in the country, is running wide open? It ain't because, right? It ain't because every time they runs right past the guy and leaves him for 15 yards. A lot of times they move him around, they fake the backfield motion to him, and then he ends up on the other side of the formation wide open. Texas fans, you remember that?
Yes.
Right? That's a scheme that gets that guy open. I think you'll see more of that with Yursich. So this gets me to Troy O'Meara. Because if you remember, and I know you do, KD, because you got a good memory, and BK might, because he's an old soul. You remember the name Dan Buckner?
Oh, yeah.
You Dan Buckner back in the day?
Number...
Is he a four?
He was a four.
He was a four. But I want to say he was something else before then, but I think he went to four after that.
Good call.
Look at BK.
He was a four. In 2009, they were looking for a tight end option, and they really didn't have a tight end option. But they had Buckner, who was a receiver that ended up being like 6'3". I think he was like 220, bigger guy. And they basically turned him into a flex tight end. They just put him right there, offset of the tackle, and he just lined up there. When they ran plays, sometimes he'd block down, sometimes he ran routes. He ended up catching 40 balls that year, 45 passes for 442 yards and four touchdowns. Essentially playing a flex tight end position.
Glorified receiver.
We know he can't put his hand in the dirt, but he's got some size. He's probably about 220, maybe 223. All right, let's just see if he can block down and be physical enough. And I'm not saying that you do that every time with Troy O'Meara and compartmentalize him. No, I'm saying at times that's a way to use him. If you're not getting what you want from Cade Brewer and the other guys at the tight end position who are Braden Lebrock, if you're not getting that, if this guy's a freak of nature and all you need is 6'3", 230 to block down on a Big 12 linebacker who are all just big safeties, for God's sakes, why not put that guy right there?
Yeah.
And then have him run down the seam on a Big 12 safety and Debo him. That's all I'm saying.
I like it.
Right?
You don't need Eric Green.
You don't? Yeah, and I'm saying that's a way.
270-pound tight end, BK, for the Steelers back in the day.
Yeah, they're going with it. But if you want to play 11 personnel that bad, get creative with it. Still be able to put your best playmakers on the field. And I think that's what Yursich is going to do. There's even talk that Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington in the slot at the same time in that 10 personnel with Brandon Eagles on the outside, and then maybe Tariq Black or a Troy O'Meara on the other side. Like that puts these fear of God in defensive coordinators. And with that formation, with that 10 personnel package, with Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington being hybrid guys, you can always shift one of those guys right back into the backfield.
Yep.
20 personnel. That easy. We just, you know what I mean? Just that easy. You guys were freaked out, so you went 6 DBs to try to stop us. Oh, forget that. Let's motion them back in the backfield. Now we're going to run the damn ball because we got the numbers.
And you can't sub.
It's a numbers game, and you can't sub.
We're looking at your hand and playing off of that.
Go with the pace, up-tempo. I think when you're starting to get guys like Troy O'Meara, BK, and you got Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington, those are positionless football players. The possibilities are endless.
Somebody record this segment and send it to the Texas coaches, please.
They listen. They listen to the podcast. They get the podcast.
Just making sure.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know some of the coaches over there listen to the show, so they'll hear it.
All right.
They know it. But Yursich, I'm telling you guys, he's the real deal. Yursich is seeing this before
I'm not worried about Yursich with this. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, Yursich is the real deal, guys. I'm telling you, he's going to be able to use some of these really creative ways and concepts to maximize and weaponize his talent.
Yeah, and I think he's got some talent. But, Rod, you kind of hit it early on, and what Lincoln Riley does so well, and you would know this a hell of a lot better than most of us, is that he can really mess with your eyes in the defensive backfield.
Oh, yes, he does.
You know, and that's how the Marquise Brown – look, everyone knows Hollywood gets up on you quicker than you can think. Yep. And DBs know that. You can see them even playing for that. You can see their first drop step. You can see where they're playing pre-snap. They know. They're not trying to get beat, but a lot of times their eyes get confused by a lot of the similar things he does.
I totally agree with you. Coach Aquino always said that's the key to discipline, where are your eyes.
Yeah.
And those really good Shano, Andy Reid, the Saints are like that. The Patriots, actually Josh McDaniels, they all, I think, lead the NFL, the top five in motion and pre-snap movement, all to mess with your eyes. It's called eye candy. They literally call it eye candy.
I love eye candy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do too. mm-hmm.
Next three of us.
It will distract you.
It will.
There's Rod's rant.
Do you guys watch Hard Knocks yet?
Need to. Who could forget Dan Buckner's most infamous moment at Texas? Behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Oh, come on.
That's him, right?
That's a wrong Buckner.
Oh, yeah, wrong
joke.
Sport, wrong decade.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Although I will say,
classic mix-up, Dan and Bill.
Bill Buckner's son did come here for a year on the baseball team.
There you go.
Who would have known that?
You're welcome for that nugget.
Me.
That's why I'm here, to make
mofo
crappy dad jokes so we get KD's wisdom.
I'm available, women.
There you go. Yeah. We find out why every day.
Right. No joke.
The triple option with RBKD.
My Bill Buckner son game does not work out well on dates.
Oh,
that's why I like y'all so much.
That is great. Hey, we were all bummed last month when we got the announcement that the State Fair of Texas will not happen in 2020, but apparently there's a way we may be able to get a Fletcher's Corny Dog this year. We'll give you the details up next.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm scared that this news is going to put BK in a bad mood because it's bad breaking news.
Damn it.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
We'd avoided that one for a little
while.
Yeah,
this comes from inside the NCAA, so it's official. Mark Emmert, president of the NCAA, said, "We cannot at this point have fall NCAA championships." So that's right. Mark Emmert, NCAA, canceling the fall championships. Basically, NCAA has canceled all their fall championship sports.
Is it canceled? Because the only thing I see is the quote, "We cannot at this point."
What? What do you mean?
That he says we cannot at this point. So is that something where that could change if they get to November?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the good thing, we're a little ways away.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. There's some sound here, but it said he discussed the latest development in fall sports and looks ahead to winter and spring championships is what he's looking ahead to. So what, based on what he's saying, I said I can't read what he's saying right now because there's a video, but says that the NCAA officially cancels all Division I championships.
Okay.
So FBS football, though,
football still
is
clean.
Now the only fall sport at any level still proceeding.
Go. Yeah, I don't want to scare the people too much, right?
Well, because football is separate from the NCAA.
Right.
Major college football separate themselves from the NCAA a long time ago. That's why the NCAA has no power or jurisdiction over major college football. They can do whatever the hell they want to do and give the middle finger to the NCAA. They're the United Nations to them. They can just decide, yeah. Thank you for your advice. We're moving on.
And we've mentioned it before. The NCAA actually, you would think, because college football, you probably hear this all the time. You hear us say this and go, wait a minute, guys. I hear you guys say all the time that college football pays for everything. You guys just being college football homers. No, we're being correct on that. It actually does pay for everything. But the NCAA makes a majority of their money off the NCAA basketball tournament. They don't make as much off college football as you would think they would.
80 to 85% of their revenue comes from the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Yeah, college football pays for the conferences and it pays for the universities, right?
Exactly.
That's where most of that money goes.
And athletic programs, which is what you're saying with that.
No doubt. And I did see a tweet that dropped a little bit earlier in the show, a statement from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee that said that they met virtually this week and are preparing to have a college football playoff for the upcoming season.
Okay.
So that's what we've got as of now. Obviously, a lot of the conferences won't be a part of the season in the fall of 2020, but the College Football Playoff Committee at least is hinting towards having a regular college football playoff for the fall this year.
Crazy times.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
All right, let's talk about some good news then. Good news?
Good news.
Yeah.
Good news.
I think this is good news, right?
This is great news.
This came as a little bit of a surprise because it was a little bit less than a month ago. I don't even know. All these days, weeks, and months go together. This is bad journalism for not having the exact time for y'all. I'm sorry. But everybody has known for a while that the State Fair of Texas is not going to happen in 2020. That announcement was made. And obviously, We're like, oh, Texas OU. There was some conversation about where's that game being played. We did find out yesterday when the Big 12 released its revised schedule that that game still is going to happen at the Cotton Bowl on October 10th. Mm. But we were just like, okay, well, since the state fair's closed, I guess there's going to be no fans in the stands for Texas OU this year. I think that was everyone's assumption, but it's actually Bob Ballew.
Oh, boy, Bob.
CBS Austin.
Nice.
Part of the station.
Whatever they're calling themselves, and also part of the station, playing through. Golf show, Saturday
Shout
mornings.
Out.
He actually broke the news here that apparently on October 10th, the date of the Texas OU game this year, Fletcher's Original Corny Dogs plans on opening on the Cotton Bowl grounds for that date.
There you go.
So I
nice.
Don't know if that means there's going to be fans allowed in the Cotton Bowl.
You would
I don't
think.
Know what exactly that means.
It's no state fair. So.
But I also saw...
Is that for media and players?
I don't know. Yeah, what are the players at halftime going to go out right. and all get corn dogs? They're going to have to wait 2 hours for tickets, too, to get those corny dogs. But I also saw, and I think Brian Davis, look at this. Look at Austin. Look at Austin Media taking care of this mm-hmm. today. Apparently, there's going to be a mini midway type of situation at the state fair on October 10th. The midway is what they call like all the games and the
what?
Arcade stuff outside at the fairgrounds.
How?
Okay, I'm glad you explained that.
There's no state fair.
I don't know. Maybe like for one day they're going to do a mini state fair. I don't know who's going to be allowed in. It might just be for the players. It might be for 25% capacity.
For the families,
For
I
the
guess?
Families. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But on October 10th, Fletcher's Corny Dog stand at the state fair. And maybe a mini midway at the state fair. So it's nothing close to the normal state fair of Texas, but we might get some state fair flair for at least the day of Texas OU. And God, if there's a
That's
way
crazy.
We can be at Texas OU this year,
that'd be fantastic.
I'd find a way to be there.
I know you will.
I don't like to play the media card very often because I like to sit in the stands with the fans and make some
you
noise
like
and drink
amongst
a little
the
bit.
People.
Yeah, I like the peasants, man. I'm cool with the peasants. I'm not like E. Hogan out in the
Bud
Light
sit up
suite.
In the
bu-
yeah,
I
don't
do
like
stuff
that.
Like that. I'm not like Craig Way up in the media room, you know, getting pampered, getting that buffet. No, I'm all about being with the people, man. But if the only way to go to that game is to be in the press box, I'm gonna pull the media card.
Two you things. One, to. Easy on the pampering. You obviously haven't had the buffet yet.
Oh, I have.
Okay. Then, yeah.
It's very good.
Okay. All right. And then the other thing would be what you're going to learn. What I do a lot is use the media card, but then once you're in, you don't have to stay up there.
It's true.
Go it's walk true. Around.
Go do what you want to do.
I'll do that baseball, basketball, and football.
Smart.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Very smart.
Until the SID runs into you. Hey, man, what are you doing here? We're like, why are you down here with a beer and a dog? Well, I just wanted to get the full experience.
I got this from, from the press box.
I'm
We're all good.
This.
I'm one of you. All right, so there's some news, some potential good news. Some bad news and some good news, right? The bad news, the NCAA is saying that all fall sports championships outside of football have been canceled for the fall semester. So your volleyball, your men's and women's soccer, your cross countries, just to name a few, those championships have been canceled for this fall. And the good news, we might have some fans, at least on the state fair grounds, on October 10th when Texas plays Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout. It's the triple option with RBKD. 3 hours down, 1 hour to go on a Thursday. Let's continue to talk some college football. The NCAA Council recommending some eligibility protections for players who cannot play this year. Some stadium capacity announcements. And gentlemen, something just happened in the sports world that I didn't think I'd live long enough to see.
Uh-oh.
We'll give you the details up next.